I'm Emily White from Minneapolis, and I'll be here for 3 weeks, and I have taught this on dreams, Jung and dreams before, and I'm happy to see all of you. And I will also try to summarize it in such a way that each session is self-contained so that, you know, you can carry away something. The textbook, or not textbook, but the book that I'm using is available in the bookstore. It's called Dreams, A Way to Listen to God by Morton Kelsey. And Morton Kelsey is an Episcopal priest as well as a Jungian analyst. It's quite an achievement. In fact, he's coming to Minneapolis to speak, and I'm looking forward to hearing him. This book will be basically what I use, but I will do more than what's in this book. You're welcome to buy it in the bookstore, but it's not essential. I think I'll cover most of what he says. And how many of you will be here for the whole week? Okay. Most of you are leaving sooner?
Yeah.
I see. Well, I'm covering everything by Thursday, and Friday and Saturday are more of a review, especially Saturday will be dream sharing, where we'll give time for individual times to talk about dreams. First of all, the importance of dreams. And I'd like to launch right into the fact that in the Bible, we know that dreams are exceedingly important. In fact, they're so important that we're amazed that people have not spent more time analyzing them. But because charlatans then and now have taken over the dream interpretation, said, dreaming of a snake means this, dreaming of a tower means that, dreaming of fire means this. And they have really brought down the reputable dream interpretation that I will show you in the Bible. It was very important. And Morton Kelsey spends a whole chapter on dreams in the Bible, and that's what I will talk about first. Dreams in the Bible are probably the most important. The dreams we have, I'll talk about later, we have ordinary dreams that we dream every night. We dream 5 times a night when our eye movements are rapid eye movements, and we may remember one of those, or we may not remember any, but the dreams are there to clear your brain. They clear your brain just like the when you clear the adding machine, when you press the clear button. So the dreams are essential for functioning. But there are dreams, those are the big dreams, that have deeper meaning. And according to Jung, whom I will talk about tomorrow, Carl Jung, every dream can be brought to mean something very personal and can show you both guidance and warning and a new insight as to why you remembered and dreamt about that particular incident. It hooks into something that bothered you during the day or excited you during the day, and you were not even aware of it until you look at the dream and say, oh my, I guess that really, really was a big event. It may be a totally small event, but it can be blown up into a very fantastic story. Unscrambling the symbols, we will talk about, I think, on Wednesday, what symbols generally mean. But remember that each dream is unique to you and has a unique meaning, and there are really no generalized symbols. Not too many, anyhow. It was in 1791 that the last serious research on dreams in the Bible was done. In the last 300 years, it has fallen in disrepute until Jung came along, and he was a son of a long line of Protestant ministers and a Christian, contrary to Freud, and therefore he began to again look at the meaning of dreams and to use dreams in his analysis. And just briefly, the difference between a Freudian and a Jungian analysis is that in a Jungian analysis, you sit face to face And it's a forward-looking thing. You start where you are now. Whether you're 60 or 30 or 20, you start where you're at and look forward. And as dreams come up, they are a mirror. And they hold up the mirror to your psyche, and then you go back. In a Freudian analysis, you lie on the couch for 7 days a week. We're not talking about money now, that's also very important. You lie on the couch, the analyst sits behind you, and you free associate, and you have to start from your childhood with your oral and anal and sexual memories. And that takes a long time. And some of it may be relevant, some of it may not be relevant to your problem that you first came in. So in addition to being more expensive, it is also a much longer process. In the end, everybody can benefit from therapy or analysis if you want to find out more about yourself. And in the second half of life, it is essential to think about, to go inward, to make an inward journey, because most of us can't move quite as fast, go quite as far, and we have available this treasure. In fact, I like to quote the scripture, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And I think dreams are one of the treasures. And according to Kelsey, it's the way the spirit still speaks to us. Okay? Now, among the American Indians, the shaman is highly respected, as you know, and he's a man who interprets dreams. And among the Sioux Indians, the young men go out and are initiated. They go out in the woods and they wait till they have a dream. Then they come back and then the shaman interprets it, and on the basis of this dream, they decide what their life is going to be like, or he helps them find the direction, sort of a vocational counseling in a way. They have a great respect for the unconscious, for the spiritual. I think in our culture, we are not as respectful of the spiritual and, oh, what is it? Nothing but a dream. Shakespeare had a beautiful quote. Every day I start with a quote. We are such stuff as dreams are made of, and our little lives are rounded by a dream. That's kind of exciting to think of. Our psyche is like made of dreams, and our little lives, meaning that our lives are very brief, really, are rounded by a sleep. This comes from The Tempest, I believe. Have any of you heard of this quote?
Yes, it is from The Tempest. I was an English major.
Thank you. I wasn't sure. Well, in the Old Testament, the first person who had a dream or a vision, and Kelsey says that visions in the Bible are often the equivalent of dreams, because when you have a vision, you're in a dreamlike state, and they often use the word vision when it could also be a dream. But he also specifically had a dream in which God spoke to him about the difference between the sacrifice and the fire. You can read it in Genesis 15:12 if you want to look it up. And that was the basis for the covenant between God and Abraham. Then Jacob, you all are familiar with Jacob's ladder. And he was reassured and reminded of God's presence, because he wrestled with the angel and was limping thereafter. So sometimes we are wounded for our benefit. The dream is a classic dream. And somebody once joked and said, maybe he dreamt the dream because he slept on a hard stone. That's equivalent to saying, maybe I had the dream because I ate pickles last night. There are physiological factors, but the meaning of the dream is the content, you see. So Jacob's ladder, wrestling with the angel, is a classic dream in the Bible. And then we have Joseph, who was called the dreamer. Here comes the dreamer. And his brothers thought, he's not with it. we'll just sell him down to Egypt. It was partly because he spent so much time on listening to his dreams that they sold him down to Egypt. And the famous saying in the Bible is that man intended it for evil, but God intended it for good. And that is something we can take away with us for comfort as well. In Egypt then, as you know, he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, the famous dreams of the 7 years. I'm sure you've all learned this in Sunday school, so I won't go. I'm just trying to show you the importance of dreams in the Old Testament. And he says at one point, does not interpretation belong to God? In other words, is not God speaking to us through these dreams? Moses and the burning bush, it was a dreamlike experience, a vision. He also had a specific dream, and there is a beautiful quote in the book of Numbers that says, how dare you criticize Moses? God speaks face to face with Moses, but with us only in our dreams. And Morton Kelsey calls this the dreams, the dark speech of the spirit. It seems to me that indeed it is a dark speech. It's not clear, you know, and it's open to many interpretation, which is why you need a skilled person to interpret the dream and to beware of the popular little books that say, you know, for $1.50 you can get what dreams really mean. Well, those are really on the level of any pop culture or the funnies or whatever. Gideon, according to Kelsey, won a battle in the Bible, won a battle because of his dream. And Samuel had heard this voice calling him over and over, and finally he said, yes, Lord, I am here, send me. And Kelsey points out over again that though this is called a vision or a voice that he heard, it is, well, he was probably in a dreamlike state and indeed was attuned to God, and that one of the ways you hear the voice of God is to focus and ask, be in prayer, and be open. The famous painting of Jesus knocking on the door, you have to open it. So similarly in dreams, you have to open your mind and heart to what is being said. Saul, in his late years, laments that God no longer speaks to him in his dreams. He was very sad at the end, and he was receiving no guidance. Similarly, the Indian chiefs, after the white man had conquered them, lamented that they no longer had dreams and no longer received guidance. I don't know if you can blame the white man altogether, but the culture, we did put down their culture so that they no longer had the esteem that they had. All the prophets spoke of dreams, had dreams that are reported in beautiful imagery. Jeremiah saw a rod of the almond tree burst into bloom. Amos had a vision of a plumb line next to the wall. I'm not going to interpret it, I'm just giving you examples. It's spelled Habakkuk, but it's Habakkuk, I suppose. He explained how to receive and interpret visions and dreams. As I said earlier, focus on God and wait patiently. Zacharias had visions in the night, and Joel, in Joel we read, young men will see visions and old men will dream dreams. It's a quote that I would like very much. But I wonder why old men only should dream dreams. And of course we would say today, young men and women, and old men and women. And if visions and dreams are about the same, I think he's merely making a poetic statement here, not discriminating. One has to be so careful today. Then there's Psalms, and there's Job, and there's Daniel who has fantastic visions and dreams. So much for the Old Testament. Now, if this doesn't give you a feeling of importance of dreams, what about the New Testament? Does it not open with a dream? Joseph doesn't want to marry Mary, and the angel speaks to him, and you have heard it 1,000 times. And he speaks to him about how to name Jesus. He speaks to him in a dream about fleeing to Egypt. So at the most crucial, all the crucial times in Jesus' life. Earlier was John the Baptist. Zacharias has a dream. In fact, is he not made dumb as a result of it? I think so. I can't remember quite well. And then he's told how to call him John and not after his father's name. When Jesus prays in the garden in John 12, he prays and a voice answers him. Earlier, a voice came out of heaven to speak at the baptism. I'm not getting into theology here. We're talking about visions and dreams and the reality of the spiritual life. And when he was praying, he heard the voice, but people heard only thunder. And Kelsey points out that much of the time, all we hear is thunder. We're not attuned. And what I'm hoping for you to do is to become a little more attuned to your own dreams, and I will tell you how to remember them and all that. Because when you listen to your dreams, they speak to you, and if you're attuned to God, God will use the dreams as a vehicle for the Spirit to open up avenues that you may not even have dreamt of. Oh my, that's a good one. So, much of the time we don't understand the language of the Spirit. We don't understand what dreams say to us unless they sort of shake us up. And much of the time, if we are in a good place, we don't really need to hear them unless there's a major decision or danger or change in your life that you have to get some guidance about. In the New Testament some more, there are the Acts of the Apostles. At every important change, there is a dream, and there are the famous ones, again, St. Paul on the road to Damascus, and Peter in the jail, when the jail opens, and when the chains fall away, the doors open. When Stephen is stoned, he hears the voice and is comforted. And Kelsey points out again and again that in all these visions and dreams, God speaks as a comforter and as a guide. And today, I think if we think in terms of the Holy Spirit speaking to us in dreams, it usually is as a guide and as a comforter. And I will later on give a few examples because I've listened to my dreams for over 30 years. Sometimes it's astounding. I'd like to sum up the dreams in the Bible. Oh, we have plenty of time, and then we'll have time for discussion. I'd like to sum this up on page 69. Why a worldview that includes a belief in the spiritual reality, Kelsey says, enables us to conclude that God is always present, not only in the physical world, but in the spiritual world, and breaks into our consciousness in dreams. That God gives directions to those who are open to Him. That we can directly confront and experience this world through dreams. And that God is more anxious to communicate with us than we are to listen. I'm sure you've heard this too. Do you have any questions so far? Now, for you and me, dreams are usually not big dreams. They're about maybe 10% of all dreams are big dreams that deal with the big things I've been talking about. God's voice, the Spirit, the archetypes. Carl Jung called the universal symbols in dreams the archetypes, and I will talk about that, I think, on Thursday. And these come from the lowest or deepest level, the deepest level of the unconscious. And it is there that the spiritual truths come forth. There are also a few prophetic dreams, and those are the ones we often hear about, that you dream that somebody died and then you get the news that this person died and you think, oh my, I'm really psychic. If you have ESP or psychic ability in your waking life, and it happens that you really are able to foretell some things or really guide people intuitively and are always right on, then maybe your dreams are also prophetic. But by and large, all of us here are not likely to have true prophetic dreams. But all of us can have large, big dreams in which the archetypes rise and in which the spirit can speak to us as a guide with wisdom and as warning. How many of you remember your dreams? Well, for those of you who don't remember them easily, the best way is to know that they're there. They're given. Because it's part of your physiology that you dream. So that if you want to remember them, you keep your eyes closed as you wake up and you don't think of what you're going to have to do. You don't plan ahead. You don't jump out of bed. But you keep your paper, pencil, and glasses, most of us need glasses, handy. I have written a few dreams without my glasses. I couldn't decipher them afterwards. But somebody mentioned have a tape recorder if you prefer. This is, you know, if you want to write them down. But it's really interesting, if nothing else for the interest. And you keep your eyes closed, you'll be surprised how it rises, how they become vivid. And sometimes just one image on which you can, the whole thing begins to develop. Some people dream in very elaborate stories. My husband is a poet and a writer, and he dreams short stories almost every night. Other people dream just simple, straightforward things. Some of us go way back to our childhood. Those are often very significant. And when you have dreams that repeat, and this has happened to all of us, the repetitive dream is one of those processing dreams. And the one dream that repeats and repeats and repeats is one that you should pay attention to, because for some reason or other, there's somebody, something is, you're to listen to it. And you're to get the message and do something about it. Well, that is to understand what the dream is saying and to assimilate it. And when you do understand it, make it conscious, it often disappears. I'm sure many of you have had this experience. Then the anxiety dreams that many of us have before a trip. Anxiety dreams are very common. They're very common in adolescence. A typical one is of falling, 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 and then waking up just before you really hit ground. There's a self-preservation in dreams. I don't think anybody ever allows themselves to be killed. They're often shot at, but not actually killed. pursued, dreams of being pursued, dreams of not knowing where you're going. Now, before I came to Holden, I was dreaming over and over again of not making the connection, because I came by train and bus and boat and just didn't quite know where to go. That's a little anxiety about the trip. Before an exam, most people have anxieties about they're writing and writing, or they don't have ink in their pen, or they can't find the classroom, whatever. Those are sort of, again, like a catharsis. They help you realize that you are anxious, and that's very normal, because you're facing a test, you're facing a new situation, you're going on a journey that you don't know what it holds. So the dream works, shows you what you're anxious about. Similarly, when you fly, I've experienced this a number of times. Let's say you fly from Seattle back to Minneapolis. It takes 2 hours, but your psyche hasn't quite caught up. So after I leave Holden, if I fly home, I'm still at Holden, I'm still at Holden, I'm still here. And finally, I do something else. I don't know, it takes a while. Have any of you experienced this, being still in the other place where you were when you fly some places? The psyche moves slower than we allow ourselves to be transported. When you make any transition, my daughter just got married. And this is a big event. I mean, it's our youngest daughter, and it was a great wedding, and of course we were excited and anxious before the wedding. Endless dreams about food and clothes and the ceremony and everything. After the wedding, more dreams, but this time, in fact, they came up here for their honeymoon, and I hadn't heard from them for a while. There were dreams that things hadn't worked out, that she'd sent him packing, that she'd ruined, the photographs. And finally, I heard from them, and the dream stopped. So I knew that I was anxious about what had happened. It turns out that they're happily married, and I'm happy too. It was a big event in my life, and I could almost trace the anxiety before and then the concern afterwards. Yes, how to remember dreams, how to record dreams if you want to record them, and then looking back and seeing what they seem to say. There seems to be a sort of pattern. But the big dreams, the ones that shake you up, that you don't have to write down, that you remember anyhow, those are the ones that really speak of the bigger events in your life, where God speaks to you. There's one example I like to give, and that is, I see our priest as, I go to the Greek Orthodox Church, I'm not Lutheran. Our priest is my spiritual director, and when I dream of him, he tells me what is important. Well, I must preface this by saying that I'm not much of a housekeeper. My kitchen is very bad, and I really hate housework. So way back, about, almost 20 years ago now, I dreamt that this priest appeared in the kitchen next to me, and he said, "Now, Emily, you really should work like this." And he took my hand and he moved it around in a circle and said, "Work with love and thanksgiving." And without anger is not enough. With love and thanksgiving. Oh, well, that's what I needed to hear. So I jumped out of bed. This time I jumped out of bed because I had this dream and I remembered it so clearly. I had also written it down. Ran down and did, "With love and thanksgiving." Well, it took me many years to simmer down and do it. I do enjoy it now and cook better and everything else. It took many years, but it was the message I needed to hear at the time. Another example is dreaming of swimming against the stream with tremendous effort. And then somebody says, "Why don't you turn around and swim with the stream?" And it was warm and gliding and beautiful. And the events in my life at the time were that I was trying to get a PhD and I was working very hard on a thesis. At the same time, I'd met my husband and he was wanting me to marry and come out to Minnesota from California. Well, I did. It has been somewhat smooth, not as smooth as in the dream, but it certainly was a turnaround. Changing of directions. I gave up. I never did get my PhD there. I'm just close. And sometimes in dreams, when you are going in one direction and are turning around, it's symbolic of, like in confession, or turning your life around. And I think that's an important message to heed. And sometimes it's as simple as the direction in which you're moving. We call it the person that's dreaming, the dream ego. In what direction is he moving, he or she moving, and how is he turning about, or does he have to turn about? Does he meet obstacles, how does he get around the obstacle, and so forth. Another time we'll talk more about specific symbols. I think I've covered most kinds of dreams, or types of dreams. I would encourage you to ask some questions so I know what you'd like to know more about.
Yeah. I was just wondering, with these anxiety dreams, do you think that they're also a way of relieving some of the anxiety? So perhaps when you wake up in the morning, it would be...
I think so. I think relieving the dreaming an anxiety dream, having an anxiety dream, also has a function of relieving it, just as any dream clears your mind and helps you cope better the next day. In hospitals, when you cannot, when you're awakened and cannot sleep a full night and cannot have your dream sequence, you know how you get kind of fuzzy, and if you go without sleep for many days, one reason you become bleary-eyed isn't just that you lack physical rest, your mind just doesn't function right. And one of the tortures to not let people sleep, one of the greatest tortures, actually. Anyone else?
When this physical aspects, like if your body, I'm embarrassed to say, I dream about water a lot.
Yeah.
Like ocean waves coming. And then when I wake up, I have to go to the bathroom really bad.
That's all right. Yeah, oh, well. Could you all hear she's being from ocean waves and then you have to go to the bathroom? Well, the physiological stimulates the mind, but what you dream, you see, then I could interpret why an ocean wave and so forth, you know, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Fawcett.
The fact that you might be lying in a very cramped position. Have you ever dreamt of lying on the railroad and across the railroad track and the train's coming, you can't move? Well, that's an anxiety dream. And part of it is because you're lying in this strange position. Or your arm falls asleep and you feel you're paralyzed. You have to, that's why each one is so individual. But what's bothering you at the time or what you're doing in your conscious life is reflected from the underside in the dream. If you can just remember this like a mirror. You can't see the back of your head unless you have two mirrors. It's the same thing, you can't know what's going on under the surface except through the dream. And it often compensates for what you're doing consciously. Now, I've experienced horrible, scary dreams right here at Holden. I said to myself the first time, how come here I'm so happy? I'm on retreat, there's no TV, there are none of these terrible things. It's precisely because, like the pressure is off, that some of the trouble from underneath can come up. And the other side of it is that when you're very troubled, sometimes you dream of very serene events. It's almost like your psyche is telling you, this too will pass. And that is a great comfort. When you are in great distress, for whatever reason, you may be dreaming of something very, very placid and beautiful. And that is a comfort. If you've had somebody die recently, you often may dream of that person, and it's another comfort. Dr. Jung himself, after his wife died, had several dreams of his wife appearing, looking very happy and assuring him that she was happy. And I think those are very, very important dreams. They also are scary because we're not quite sure, and it deals with our theology and what we really believe about. But we won't know. In a twinkling, we'll be changed. And that's our faith. Any other questions?
I've been retired for about 6 years, and I still dream about working.
Well,
it really disturbs me.
Uh-huh. Well, you enjoyed your work?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? What kind of work, if I may ask?
I was a bread man, and I delivered, and it's always a pressure situation where there's time involved and I need to run, and it seems like there's a lot of obstacles in my room.
That's interesting. I don't know why, but as you spoke, I thought you should start baking bread at home. Maybe the dreams will go away. And again, you worked many, many years, and your psyche may not have quite caught up. May still be processing the pressure that it was. My husband also retired, and he worked, he was a teacher, but he also worked at the railroad some. And he often has dreams about the railroad and just all sorts of things. There's pressure there. Or about teaching his students, and they were not listening to him.
My mother died in 67, and often I dream of her so often, but they're always good dreams. They're not sad dreams. Does that mean she's probably happy?
And they're comforting to you. That's
yes, it's nothing ever bad. It's always good.
Right, that's nice.
And I'm not depressed by it or anything like that. I just feel good about it.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else up there or any questions?
How come does it seem like the only dreams I remember are the bad dreams?
Well, maybe those are the ones you need to remember. And we could talk later about what you mean by bad. Would you be here? Would you be here for the end of the week? Towards the end of the week, because I'll have one-on-one time sharing, dream sharing then, and we can talk about it in greater depth. Again, those are the ones that you remember. What things do you remember in your conscious life? The things that went well, or the near accident that you had, which you talk about and talk about, or the mistake that you made, it's right there, over and over. And there was an experiment made in psychology where they gave people 10 tasks. They allowed them to finish 5 of them, and 5 they interrupted. Then afterwards they said, please tell us which of the, maybe it was more than 10. Write down the ones you remember. And invariably the ones that were interrupted, or the ones they remember, there's a tension left. So similarly with the bad dreams, there's no tension in them. But I would think that you probably also remember some of the good ones. Anyone else?
You spoke some about techniques for remembering dreams and writing them down. And I wonder if it's an issue, the level of detail that you decide to write at.
Okay.
I've written now for some time,
okay,
and noticed that when I do write after I wake up, I can write for a long time because so many tiny things you notice, and then I get burnt out on this journal keeping.
I see.
And I wonder if that's a balance that you need.
Well, there's several things. Sometimes all you need are cue words. You really don't have to write all the details. But if it's important to you to have the details, then write them. But if they're, it's not essential to remember every little detail, and yet you must not edit, and you must not leave out anything vital. But if you spend too much time writing down details, you might get lost in the whole overall picture. It's the overall picture that's really more important than the details, except the very vivid ones. There's some that you're just, they're so vivid. Just before I came, I dreamt of eating a big roast turkey, and it was so vivid that I woke up, my husband said, breakfast is ready, and I was still chewing on the dressing of the turkey. That's how vivid it was. Well, as I said.
So sometimes work with keywords, look for the larger picture. That's where I started moving towards.
Right, I think that would help you.
It's simplified.
And I'd like to share another dream where I was doing something like you. I was writing down every detail, and it was a long dream, and then there was something totally unrelated about a woman, an old friend I hadn't seen for a long time, looking through a window. I said, oh, I don't need this little detail. Why would I dream about this when it has nothing to do with the rest of the story? But I've been told, don't edit out important details. In other words, right, the salient things of two parts of the dream. There may be two different dreams, you see. This, it's important not to leave out something extra. So the next day I could think, why did I dream about it? And I got a address book for the, what do you call it, when you get from a society, the names, the Jung Society had all the names.
Membership
directory. Directory, thank you. The directory. And of course, there it was. There was her name. She lived within a block, and I called her, and we've been close since then. It was interesting because I had not wanted to write it down. I had not thought I had any relevance to the rest of the dream, and I was about to see my supervisor, and the dream dealt with something very important over here, but this was very important to hear as well, you see. So don't write too many details, but write everything that's important, or rather, everything that seems to be salient. Yeah,
I heard about people dreaming in color or in black and white. And to me, I don't ever remember whether it was in color or black and white. It doesn't make a difference, does it?
No, it doesn't. I think you dream the way you see. You're not really aware of color unless it is very important. Now, I see the lady right in front of me with a red. Now, that's very important. It jumps out at me. All the reds do, because red jumps out at me. But I don't think that color per se is important.
I'm aware of all my senses when I dream. I have sight,
hearing. Can you speak louder? I can't hear you.
I'm aware of all my senses when I dream, not just sight, but I mean like taste, smell.
Really?
Physical, you know, sense of touch.
So you're aware of all your senses when you dream.
Pretty much. Well, usually there's one that's
more
the most important. Like, you know, sometimes it'll be a physical feeling. Yeah.
Hot and cold are very important. And those, unfortunately, the hot and cold is very often that you're either too warm or too cold in the bed. Thank you. Yes?
I have an experience. I don't know if it's like a dream or not, but I came from Thailand, and
yes,
a lot of people in Thailand, they have this, and they call it ghost haunted, or like ghost cover.
Uh-huh.
The feeling that you lie down, like, when you sleep, and you feel very, you feel like you're paralyzed, and you cannot move, and like you almost die, and it's very, very feel very scary, like you feel like you're not gonna leave anymore.
Yeah.
And you need, the people, the other people try to turn you around, or you have to try to turn yourself, and after you turn you, it will go away.
Yeah.
But it's like somebody lie down on you.
Oh, really?
It's so heavy, and it's just like...
And have you experienced that?
I have once, and it's been pretty common in Thailand, and I have my friends, American friends, he has that pretty often too, and he tried to go around and ask doctor in America, and most people didn't know that.
Mm.
But it was known pretty common in Thailand.
Uh-huh.
And
I've experienced.
Yes.
Not to that degree, but it's like a state between waking and sleeping, because my mind is conscious and I know that I'm asleep, but it's a feeling. I don't feel like there's
you
weight
don't feel
on
the
me,
physical.
But I feel like I'm paralyzed.
Uh-huh.
And like I can't wake up.
Yeah.
And I can't.
There's a term for that. It's called a hypnagogic state. Half awake, half asleep. You're in this sort of between. You're not fully asleep. It's just before you wake up, too, that happens. But mostly, you could be awake and conscious, but still in this nebulous state. And I think that's what happened to some of the people who had the visions. It's at that point that you see or hear things.
Does that happen with insomnia a lot?
Well, insomnia is a different thing.
It's happened to me 3 or 4 times in the last year, and it's always been a period where I've had several nights in a row of no sleep or very little sleep.
Well, we could talk about it later. I really don't know that much about it, but that is very interesting because the body has become almost non-functional, and so that you're open, as I said earlier, you're open to some spiritual forces. But it's also scary because, you see, we are never very much at home in the spiritual world. I think that I should have said right in the beginning. That's why we sometimes are afraid of our dreams. Because it's a different timeless world. I even sometimes think that things are backwards, forward or back. There's no time. Up and down may have significance, may not. But the most important thing is that it's a different reality. But it is a vital, it's a reality that is real. But it's a different reality. I hope I'm not repeating myself too much here. But there was somebody here had a hand up.
Yes, yeah. I did. Frequently, I suppose maybe the clock wakes me and then I don't want to wake up because I'm in the middle of a pleasant dream.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to continue the dream. Well, occasionally you're able to continue it, but not always.
No.
And I was interested in what you said about repetitive dreams, because I have two dreams that I've had several times, and they're different, but they're about huge houses, and I just keep thinking to myself, am I thinking in my father's house or many mansions, many rooms?
That could be. That's a nice interpretation. Waking up, having the clock wake you, and continuing in a pleasant dream, is very common, and it's very hard to get yourself out of there, especially if you have to face an unpleasant day. One of the good ways to avoid that is to... Do you have a snooze alarm where you could turn
no,
off?
No, I don't.
Well, that helps. And set it for like 10 minutes, turn it off quickly, dream a little, but know that the alarm will go off again, you know? Whereas if you really have to get up with that first alarm, then you have a conflict. Some
is
dreams are more real than others.
Dream?
And yes?
Wouldn't it be better to finish out the dream?
Oh, well, certainly, but if you have a job you have to go to, you know. Say, tell your boss, I have to finish my dream. Can you speak a little louder, please?
A dream where somebody is breaking into the house and you're trying to yell. And you just can't. You can't get a hold
of it. That is frustrating because I don't know why, but it's one of the typical dreams where you're trying to yell, trying to call for help, and you can't. The converse of it is when you speak in your dreams, and your voice does come out, and you do yell. Those are those nightmares, or I'm sure many of you have heard the joke about the husband who says the wrong name, calls for this woman by a different name, you know, and all that. When you can't yell, it's simply that you're really scared, and it's a real anxiety dream. But the person breaking in into your house is a dream I will talk about later when I talk about archetypes, because it's the we call it the trickster. It's an archetype of some force that's trying to undermine something, take something away from you, lead you away. We could call it the evil spirits, you know. So we could talk about that later too.
Here.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I had understood that different subjects in your dream are actually different parts of your own spirituality or personality.
Well, what I talk, but I will touch on it now because so many aren't going to be here. You dream of different people and they are different aspects of yourself. That's why after you write down your dreams and these people reappear, you can begin to recognize what they represent. Now, if you dream of your own husband or wife, it's usually something about your husband and wife, but if you dream of people you don't know so well, you have to say, what do they represent to me? For instance, the teacher may represent intellectuality, the priest, or the minister, your spiritual self. Your child creativity, your grandmother wisdom and so forth, you see? Aspects of yourself. There's a whole school of thought that's called the Gestalt School, where they have you identify parts of yourself in the dream figures. And that's very useful. It's not exactly the way I've done it, but that is useful. And it's quite popular. Anyone else? Any questions here?
Going back to, you know, getting up in the morning and finishing your dream. I have an awful hard time getting up in the morning unless I finish my dream, and I lay in bed and kind of wake up slowly and sort it out. And if I don't do that, if I jump up and get out of bed right away, I have a bad day. It affects my attitudes. It affects my day very negatively. But if
you're my best evidence here. Y'all here? She has to finish her dream, wake up slowly, and it affects her whole day. And if she does this, she has a good day. It goes into the day slowly and centered, I suppose. And if you don't, then it's all sort of scrambled.
But my question is, I'm going to be changing my lifestyle, and I'm going to be having, right now I'm not working, so I have the freedom to do that. And I'm going to be changing my lifestyle to be on a schedule. And I'm not sure how I'm going to be handle the stress of
getting up on time.
Yes.
Well, that's precisely why I say set your alarm 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever time you need earlier, then you really have to get up. Uh-huh. I mean, you have freedom.
Then
you're
I go
control.
Back to sleep.
Yeah, but then get yourself a snooze alarm. You know, it's about the only way, because otherwise you're nervous. Will I remember, you know, will I go back to sleep?
Yeah.
Or have somebody wake you. I mean,
have two alarms. Have another clock.
Have another clock, you know, whatever. You know, but allow yourself that space. And I would definitely, if you have to do this, allow myself 15 minutes, you know, for the first real getting up to it. That would do it, and I think you'll handle it all right. And I'm very happy that you're doing this, because this is what I'd like all of you to do, especially if you're retired and you have time and leisure in the morning. Do most of you have time and leisure in the morning? Yeah. If you do, it's a really a delicious, delightful, and entertaining. Tomorrow I'll try to bring in some other dreams that I brought some of mine along, some of which are quite funny. My husband has all these short story dreams. Our first thing in the morning is, did you dream? Did you dream? And who goes first?
That sounds like my husband. Yeah. He wakes me up sometime when I'm crying. You know, it's like,
oh, really?
Yeah. He says, what are you crying about? You know. I remember just at the time, but it goes away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then also in the middle of the night, when one has, at our age, get up to go to the bathroom, you sometimes remember it, and you're too tired to write it down, and by morning it's all gone. But most of them can go. Remember, not every dream is of such great significance. But if you do want to listen to the dreams, over a period of time, you'll see a pattern, and that's what's so exciting. And
how long is the average dream?
Well, that's a good question. How long is the average dream?
6 minutes.
Between 3 and 6 or 7 minutes. It's quite short, but in psychologically, and this is very important, it could stretch over days, weeks. There's no time in dream, but it may seem like you're dreaming a very long time. But when they wake you with the, when they watch your eye movements in the laboratory, they're very short periods, because it's also when you sleep most lightly. First you go down into very deep and dreamless sleep. That's the most relaxing for the body. See, first the body relaxes. Then you come up to the eye movement, to the rapid eye movement, and you have a dream that clears part of your brain. You go to the next level of deep sleep, then you go up to another rapid eye movement, and then another deep sleep, and then rapid eye movement, and then a very shallow. And it's those last, it's during that last time that you usually remember the dream. But theoretically, you have at least 5 or 6 dream periods. And they're very short. They can be very intense.
That's my shame. That's what happens to me.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. Is it true that most of your dreams about your childhood are in those earlier deep stages of sleep?
Okay, let me say it again. The deep sleep is dreamless. It's during the rapid eye movements, or during the earlier period.
The night before, in other words, is what I mean.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think there's any relation there. But I would say that the important part is that if you dream of your childhood, look back to when you were, 10, 11, 12, and put yourself in that position and see what was going on then that is analogous to what's going on now, because we work through, and I'll talk about that again too, we work through the same problems over and over again, except we have more experience, hopefully. By the time we get to be our age here, we have a lot of experience. But some of these things have not been totally solved, so we may hit a snag that reminds us of something that we never resolved when we were a child. So that the childhood dreams are very important. You go right back down there and say, what was it then that I was worried about that is similar to that I'm worried about now? Well, in the dream, they could sum up.
Are you going to talk more about dreams that repeat?
Yes. Any other questions? So we have about 15 more minutes. Then we have, I'll talk briefly about dream symbols, dream symbols. They're not fixed. Freudians say that dream symbols are fixed, that every time you dream of a cave, it's a womb. You dream of a tower, it's a phallus. I think that's a fallacy, and pardon the pun. We do feel that dreaming of water is often dealing with the unconscious, because water is so basic. If you're riding on the water, or if you're swimming underwater, all those things, you know, you could interpret symbolically. That having a bicycle versus a car versus an airplane would say something about the speed with which you're traveling through life. It's rather interesting. Walking and biking, you're using your own energy, whereas in any other vehicle, a car, train, or an airplane, you're passive and you're being transported. We look at things like that. Is it active or passive? And we often look at the images in terms of their shape, round, the circle being a very basic symbol of continuity, eternity, unity, whatever. And the numbers are important, but I will talk about that in more detail. I just arrived, you see, so I'm doing this on top of my head, really.
You can't tell the lightning about snoring.
No, that's not my field. I'm sorry. I think it's simply if you're lying on your back, the passage, especially if you keep your mouth open, the air passage makes it sound. That's a different thing. Sleepwalking is a physiological problem that is not related to